Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Compound and Friends. On tonight's show, an action-packed edition of What Are Your Thoughts with Michael Batnick and I. I think I know the one thing that can put a stop to the AI crash on Wall Street, and I want you to know what that thing is too, and we will discuss. Special thanks to our sponsor, Public. More on Public in just a moment. Let me send you into the show.
Welcome to The Compound and Friends. All opinions expressed by Josh Brown, Michael Batnick, and their castmates are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Ritholtz Wealth Management. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any investment decisions. Clients of Ritholtz Wealth Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Yeah. It's us. We're back. Hey, guys, wanted to say thank you so much for joining us. Those of you who are with us for the live on YouTube every Tuesday at 5 p.m., we really appreciate it. Want to shout out some people in the chat before we say thank you to the sponsor. Cliff is here. Jerry Jinma is here. Christian Groff says, Josh low-key called the pullback like 2 weeks ago. Quote, people are talking. I really did. I believe the exact phrase I used was,
get out now.
We are in a kayak headed over Niagara Falls. I wish I could uncall the pullback and have it reverse, but I'm not that powerful. Chris Hayes is here. Akbar Muhammad, what up, says what up, y'all. What's up, man? Georgie's here. Everybody's here. Nicole is in the chat. Everybody say hello to Miss Nicole. Anybody else I missed that I've been meaning to say hello to for a while? We'll do it in post. We'll do it later. All right. Guys, tonight's show, like every week, Michael Batnick and I talk about some of the biggest topics in the markets. It's been hella active for the last couple of weeks. VIX hit 25 today, and we have all sorts of action to get into, and we're so excited to be here and do it with you guys. But before we continue, I want to say a huge thank you to our sponsor, Public. Michael, tell us about Public.
Today's show is sponsored by Public. That's right, Josh. Public is the investing platform for those who take it seriously. You can build a multi-asset portfolio of stocks, bonds, options, crypto, and more. You can also access industry-leading yields, like the 3.8% APY you can earn in your cash, with no fees or minimums. But what sets Public apart? AI isn't just a feature. It's woven into the entire experience. From portfolio insights to earnings call recaps, Public gives you smarter contacts at every touch point. Plus, earn an uncapped 1% match when you transfer your portfolio, including IRA transfers, rollovers, and even contributions. Fund your account in 5 minutes or less, paid for by Public Investing. Full disclosures in podcast description. Josh,
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to do this. Let's give people the URL: public.com/WAYT. That's public.com/WAYT. Did you get to watch that demo that the Public guys did for me yesterday?
Not yet. I was just about to ask you, how'd it go?
I mean, it's pretty sick, dude. It's like it's in two stages. Stage one is available now, which they call generated assets. And some of you guys have seen it on YouTube. We published it last night, but basically generated assets is like, I want a portfolio with only CEOs who are older than 45 years old. And I want no companies that have economic exposure to Brazil.
Equally weighted. Can you equally
whatever you want.
Weighted by earnings growth.
Whatever.
I just want bald CEOs.
No, I'm telling you that like this is what they built. And so now you get this list. You don't have to trade it. They give you the list. They show you all the holdings. And then if you click into the holding, it'll explain how it got onto the list. So it enables you then to refine it in any way you want. And if you like what you ended up with, you can click trade with a certain dollar amount. And it's like buying a stock.
I love it.
And it's you end up, it's not an ETF, obviously, because you just created it. You just end up with a basket of stocks that you can buy instantly, sell it instantly. It's like a, it's it's like held by a ticker, like just like all of your other holdings. So if you, like, here's a really good example. When the price of crude oil falls, as it did again today, or as it's been for the last week or two, and now I think Goldman Sachs came out and said $52 crude next year. That's a negative for a lot of energy stocks, but there are stocks that that's bullish for, and that includes the refiners. Valero was one of the top performers in the S&P, also on my best stocks in the market list. You could say to it, build me a portfolio of stocks that are involved in refining and benefit from low oil prices or whatever. It's going to give generate a list, and you could just instantly be like, long.
Love it.
Like, dude, this is like, so that's generated assets. And then the next phase is they take that technology and they turn it agentic. So now it's like, not only are you speaking this investment product into existence, then you could tell it, I want you to tax loss harvest that portfolio. Look for tax loss harvest opportunities every 30 days. Or I need you to pull $5,000 out every month and put it into Bitcoin. Like it'll agentically, that's available in January, like basically make the brokerage account into your worker.
I love it.
Yeah, these guys are on fire. I'm so proud of them. All right, let's get into the show. Should we talk about the AI crash or nothing to see here?
No, let's do railroads.
Is it an AI crash?
No.
Okay. Meta in a 27% drawdown. Very fast. Not a crash.
Crash.
Oracle in a 30-ish percent drawdown. Very fast. It's not an AI crash. Are you sure?
We're allowed to disagree. You might call it a crash. I mean, there are names that are crashing. CoreWeave is absolutely crashing.
AI.
Is it an AI crash? I think there was a lot of disbelief, certainly a lot of doubt. Looks a lot different than it did a couple of weeks ago, for sure.
Well, so if I didn't say the names to you, if I didn't say Oracle and Meta, but I told you two of the seven largest market caps involved in the theme, as well as the Neo scalers like CoreWeave, like if I said they were down 30% in a matter of weeks, you would say that sounds crashy.
Let's not split hairs. It's ugly. Okay. We could argue crash, not crash, whatever. There is, I think what's different about this particular sell-off, and they're all different, is that this is calling into question a lot of the things that we believed 2 weeks ago. Hey, wait a minute. What's the depreciation schedule of these chips? You're saying 6 years, but really it's like three. That changes your balance sheet dramatically, changes your financial statements dramatically. Maybe your earnings are going to be nowhere near what we think they are. And therefore, boom, reset. Needed it. Healthy.
Right. What's so interesting is we always assumed all along that the thing that would put, and this has been going on for 3 years, by the way, we always just all like tacitly agreed that the thing that would put this all in jeopardy was when one or more of the players decided they wanted off the carousel and they were going to stop spending. That actually didn't happen at all. If anything, nope. They've ratcheted up the amounts they're going to spend, and the street is now saying, maybe that's not the best idea, or maybe we don't love the way you're financing it and or accounting for the expenses. And that's, so it was not what we all thought.
Such a good point.
Such a great, all I do is come to the
Dude,
table.
No, you're so
points.
Right. We thought, at least I thought, that this would, quote, end when we listened to an earnings call and we heard something different, where like the demand might not be what we thought it was. And then, oh shit. NVIDIA is down 26% overnight. That is absolutely not what happened. And yeah,
no.
Credit to you. It's a good point.
No, and that's the funny thing, the frustrating thing about markets, but also the funny thing about life is like it's rarely the thing you're worried about. It's always something else that you probably would not have conceived of in advance.
Yeah.
And so that's what's playing out. Like nobody is saying, all right, that's enough. It's the opposite. And that turned out to be the bear case. And look, it's one of the things, I'm doing this almost 30 years. It's one of the things that I most love about the markets is that it's a puzzle that'll never be solved. But then it's also one of the things that's really frustrating. Hey, here we are. Let's put up this VIX chart just to set the table. That escalated quickly. We had a faster VIX rise When was that? Was that early October? Can you remind me?
Yeah, that was the Friday day when Trump was going to slap 130% tariffs on China again. That was that.
Oh, wow. And then, all right. And then prior to that, really nothing on this scale this year.
So I'm going to make the case
until
later.
Until you go back to Liberation Day.
I'm going
to
make the case later in the show that there's been a lot of nothing going on in the market, right? Mm. It's just been like, there's been no news. And it's been a lot of, call it what you want, complacency, whatever. We've had a hell of a run-up. And the reintroduction of risk, although nobody likes to see their stocks go down, myself included, we need this. You need to build a wall of worry to climb to new heights. It can't just be announcement, boom, 35% to Oracle. That's not sustainable. So we reset. There was a lot of doubt. And we'll see. Listen, I said to you guys yesterday, I love a wall of worry. I love it. Unless there's reason to worry. And, you know, we'll find out.
You sit on a throne of complacency.
Excuse me?
You just said there was a lot of doubt. No, there like is right now there, a lot of doubt.
There is a lot
you
of doubt.
You said was. Like, there I don't is. Think, there I don't is. Know if we're through this.
No, excuse me. If I said was, I meant to say is.
Oh,
there
all
is
right.
There is a lot of doubt. And I don't know. Okay. I don't know if we're gonna, if this is overblown or not. But I don't think the AI trade is over. How about that? I don't think this is right. The top.
Either Nicole or Duncan just dropped a poll into the chat, but I don't see the results. I don't even know what the poll was.
What's the question?
I don't like bullish or bearish. And somebody responded
bullish or bearish. That's
somebody responded like most bearish. I don't know. Duncan, can you pop in?
We gotta be more specific than that.
I don't really know.
It's
what happened?
It's in the chat here if you want to look. It's 64% bullish, 36% bearish, 362 votes.
On what? And when?
Are just you bullish or bearish today? Are you feeling bullish or bearish? I do it every week.
Great poll, Dunk.
Okay. All right. No, credit to Duncan every week. Okay.
All right. Here's a poll of portfolio the fund manager survey from Bank of America. Put this up. Okay, like this is notable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Record number of fund manager survey investors. So these are global portfolio managers that respond to Bank of America on a regular basis. And this is a record number now say companies are overinvesting. I assume they mean in AI, too much CapEx. The net percentage who say companies are overinvesting is, what does that look like to you, 20%? 20% of investors saying that. That was a negative number in every survey ever up until this week. Look at it. That looks weird, right?
Yeah, dude, you know what's so funny? How fast narratives change. So you mentioned 5 minutes ago that this doubt came out of nowhere. Like the depreciation expense, like, okay, I that wasn't on my bingo card. You know what could fix this in 2 seconds? If Sam Altman gets on another podcast next week and says, guess what? $30 billion in annualized revenue. Okay, over. Party back on.
Oh, I don't know. I think he's cost himself some credibility. I was going to say, you know what could take us into a 50% drawdown? He gets on another podcast, gets into a snit with the host, and drops off.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
That would do it.
That wouldn't be good.
All right. According to the fund manager survey, the investors are bullish, running very low, 3.7% cash levels. More than 50% continue to think AI stocks are in a bubble, and the contrarian trades being mentioned, long sterling.
What?
Is it pounds or silver? I don't know.
Pounds, okay.
Long FTSE, short emerging markets, okay. Long discretionary, short banks. I don't really understand that. All right, next chart. This is that more than 50% think AI stocks are in a bubble, but like they're not selling the stocks. Based on their positioning. So like everyone is still like, yeah, it's on the way to becoming a bubble. Like no, they don't really have a lot of people that are like, it's a full-blown bubble. And not only that, I'm expressing that with my portfolio positioning. I'm short or I'm out. It's not what's going on right now. All the shorts are just people that tweet.
Okay. I guess the question is, if it is a bubble, then it was a bubble. Okay. Then it's on its way to popping. Because you can't say it's a bubble today. When Meta's in a 27% drawdown, we'll get to the numbers later, Oracle, it either was a bubble that is deflating or that's it. It's not a bubble. We're not in a bubble right now. There's no euphoria anywhere. Everybody is skeptic.
All right. Let's do some skepticism. There was a very notable downgrade today from a small firm, Redburn Rothschild. I think they're British or based in London. And if I'm wrong about that, nobody send me an email and get mad at me. I'm doing the best I can. But like this got the market's attention. Redburn downgraded Microsoft and Amazon from buys to neutral ratings, saying the market is too complacent about the economics of Gen AI. They argue investors have been treating Gen AI like early cloud computing, but the numbers don't support that comparison anymore. So basically what they're saying is that Gen AI's economics, unit economics, meaning like per customer, I assume, are far weaker than cloud 1.0, which was like 2015, 2016, 2017. The analyst said it takes six times more capital to generate the same economic value with Gen AI as it did during the build out of the early cloud era. They're estimating $1 of AI infrastructure is only generating 20 cents of net present value. They're being nerds about it and looking at the actual numbers, which I don't know why, but this is a thing that people used to do. And their basic take is the economics just don't work yet. They cut their target on Microsoft from 560 to 500, which is a big chunk, on slower monetization for AI workloads. And their Amazon target stayed at 250, but they still cut it to a neutral. Risk reward no longer looks asymmetric to the upside. They say AI workloads now account for more than half of AWS and Azure growth, but are delivering lower returns, higher depreciation, heavier CapEx, and slower payback periods. This is the first time since this analyst, Alexander Heisel, cut both stocks since 2022. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are it is way too early to look at the unit economics of these businesses. We have no idea what they're going to turn into or what they're going to become. Imagine looking at Facebook in 2014 and jumping to conclusions on, oh, the spend on the mobile build out, it just doesn't support the all the whatever cap. It's too early. Now, healthy skepticism makes sense. I get all that. It is way too early, which is why you see these companies gyrating wildly, violently, because there is a lot of uncertainty. And right now, investors are asking questions. They're selling. There's a reset. Good. These companies need to prove their worth. Let's see it.
Counterpoint. I'm sympathetic to it's way too early. Because, of course, it's always too early. Like, nobody knows in the future. And there's equal amount of space for the optimists to be right. Okay. But don't we jump all over these people for being late? Like, yeah. Like, in other words, so they're admittedly early, but what they're saying is like based on the current economics of the spend versus the payback, and we're gonna talk a little bit more about that in a second with another chart, like it's not encouraging and it's definitely not pointing toward a need for spending more. It's like, oh, we're barely making money. If only we spend more. Like that's not. I mean, that's not always how it works.
Credit to this analyst for going out on a limb. I do respect.
But investment banking business for you, Alexander.
But current economics. Tell me future economics, which I know they can't. I get it.
All right. NVIDIA reports tomorrow night. Can I share some of the storylines?
By all means.
All right. A lot of investors think that NVIDIA is the thing that can stop the AI crash, or you call it AI correction. A lot of people are saying like, if anyone or anything or any event could put a pin in this and calm everybody down, it's a blockbuster number for NVIDIA with amazing guidance and the typical Jensen Huang optimism that we've all become accustomed to. And I sort of think that's right. Like if you were to ask me like what could make this better or way worse, it's a function of what's going to be said tomorrow night at 5 o'clock.
No, what would be very interesting is I'm assuming we're going to hear good things. I'm assuming we're going to hear good numbers, optimism. What if the street doesn't buy it and just whacks it anyway?
Well, pull up a chair because we're all going to find out together. Okay. JP Morgan is bullish. They put out a note today and they recommended a short-dated option trade, you know, for the Robinhood crowd that will pay off if NVIDIA's stock climbs after tomorrow's earnings. Their target on NVIDIA is 215. The stock closed 182-ish, 181. We also have a bunch of big-name sellers in NVIDIA over the last quarter. P Peter Thiel's macro hedge fund dumped its entire stake during Q3, worth about $100 million. And Masayoshi Son famously liquidated his NVIDIA stake. This is SoftBank, $5.8 billion worth of stock, whacked it out. And some people actually are pointing to that sale as being the trigger for a lot of the selling in other NASDAQ stocks related to AI, which I sort of feel like it was happening first. And NVIDIA has barely come down relative to the others, so I'm not sure if I agree. Michael Burry is out there allegedly with a short on against NVIDIA, but who the hell knows, because he's like initiating positions, then he's closing his fund, then he's teasing some event on November 25th. I don't know. Was he going to set himself on fire in the street? I have no idea what that's about, but that's part of the storylines here. Earlier this month, the securities filing showed that if Burry's hedge fund bought options, that will pay off if NVIDIA shares drop. So the idea is he shut down his fund, meaning like the fund has to live with those trades and nothing happens until something happens with those trades, I guess. Or he's kicking out his investors and converting to a family office maybe in order to hold those trades without anybody interfering with him. I have no idea. I'm just saying like this is the speculation. And then I wanted to say two other things. I want to give people the numbers. So the revenue expectation is $54.8 billion for the quarter. The earnings per share is $1.26. The data center revenue is expected to be $48.9 billion, which would be 59% year-over-year growth. Gross margin, 73.5%. Can you imagine that? And then guidance for next quarter, the whisper number is $61 billion. And then like the wild card is if anything is going on with China, which Jensen already told you, expect nothing from China. And anything that happens there is like a cherry on top, not in the guidance. So it's, you know, as usual, it's all about the data center. Everybody's going to want to know about Blackwell shipments. And I think I want to get your take on this. I think like the number one question, if I were a sell side analyst, that I would ask during the call is, what's your take, Jensen Huang, on the depreciation debate? Because these are all his customers. So keep in mind, he's talking out of both sides of his mouth. On the one hand, he's mocking people jokingly for using prior generations of GPUs, like get with the program, you need Hopper, now you need Grace Blackwell, now you need whatever the next thing is. But then on the other hand, all of his biggest customers have depreciation schedules where they're showing these chips will be in use and productive out to 5 years. In some cases, 6 years. So like, which is it? Please weigh in, Mr. Wang, because like this has got real consequences in this ecosystem and you're the most important player in this ecosystem. Weigh in on this debate, would you please? What do you think about that question? Do you think anyone will ask it? And what do you want to know?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So we're on the same wavelength. And I would say that there is a 140% chance that question gets asked. What I like about this earnings season.
Dan Ives asks it? No way.
100% it comes up.
It's not coming from Dan though.
Throw up this chart that about NVIDIA into earnings. This is by far the weakest setup or the weakest price action going into earnings over the last couple of years.
I wasn't even aware of this.
There is a lot of doubt heading into the quarter and we'll see. I'll tell you what. If this thing does drop 10% overnight, I'm buying the snot out of it in the after hours. I'm telling you now.
Can we put that chart back up? This is the 2 week return heading into the earnings. I mean, if you're bullish, it's a nice setup that they just gave you. You're buying the stock 9% lower going into the number. So even if it's just an on target number and doesn't blow people away, it's not like you're buying it up 10% into that. So yeah. I sort of like that for a long.
Check this out. You know what we haven't spoke about in a while? Remember the ETF NVDL, the double levered granite shares ETF? The assets peaked We have this chart, please, John. The assets peaked, I guess, about a year ago at $6.69 billion. Mm. And the stock is up quite a lot since then. And I guess in a really sensational environment, you would expect investors to be piling into this thing. No, not really. Not at all, in fact.
They cooled off on it. Look at that. That peaked in December of last year. I mean, one caveat is like the markets. Do you remember the markets post-election going into year end?
Yeah.
That November to December period?
Yeah.
It was bonkers.
Yeah, you're right.
It was and I just think that was less about NVIDIA and more about like, oh my God, Trump won again. We're all getting tax cuts. We're all getting laid. Like it was
100%. But Josh, and also year to date at the peak a couple of weeks ago, NVIDIA was up 50%. So you would expect people to be piling in, and they just really didn't. So here's where I'm at. Things were so wacky a couple of weeks ago with this one-way trade. I think we did this on the show, or maybe it was on TKF. I had ChartKid make a chart showing the rolling whatever day return. Where's this chart of semis compared to, there we go. Semis added $1 trillion in market cap in the past 5 days. You remember this?
Yeah. And that was it.
So that was literally the top. That was October 30th. Over a 5 day period.
We said it was stupid. You said this is ridiculous.
Yes.
When you put the chart up.
And so since then, guess how much has come out? $830 billion. That was the top.
Holy shit, that's so much money. Just pause on that. That's $1 trillion came out of one sector of the market in a week, 2 weeks.
Since the top.
So much money.
So I understand that these names are down bigly. Oracle, Meta, a lot of other names, CoreWeave, of course. But come on, do you think these things were up so much? They were up so much.
So I wanted to say that. Put my chart up. That was before that. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The headline is the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index enters correction territory.
Good.
But like, look at the chart. Look where it came from.
Right.
So yes, it's officially in a 20% drawdown, a 10% drawdown. Yeah. So that's correction territory. Fine. But like a little bit of, and to the journal's credit, they gave you that context, you know, even with the scary headline. They said the last time the semis were in an actual bear market, which is 20% or more from a recent high, was January 22nd through April 8th, you know, right into Liberation Day. The semis were in a 35% bear market by April 8th. Did you know that? I don't even remember it. Yeah, I know what happened.
Whacked into the Stone Age.
All right. Berkshire Hathaway. So this is Warren Buffett's, one of his last trades of his life. He bought Google.
Well, he retired. He didn't buy this.
I know, but whatever. Berkshire Hathaway under his watch, technically for the last couple of months. They did this in the summer. Berkshire Hathaway disclosed $4.3 billion to $4.9 billion worth of Alphabet.
You know what's funny? Us two schmucks, we sold to Warren Buffett.
Oh, literally. I think I sold it in June, but close enough. I sold it lower than where they bought it. I looked. Don't think I didn't look. What was I going to say? So they bought almost 18 million shares. Loop Capital upgraded Alphabet today from a hold to a buy.
Tough scene.
Raised their target to 300. Didn't really help. The stock looks better than the others right now. I think the halo from Berkshire buying. But they like the name. It didn't do much. Let me do a 1 year Google price performance. If you want to know where I sold, just find the lowest point in the chart. I think I'm June. I forget. Pretty damn close to the lows. I either sold right before or right after the lows. And of course, look at it smiling back at me.
Right. Nobody's perfect.
Look at this chart. Look at the smile in this chart.
Yeah, you dumb bastard.
All right. So Loop saying Google's core ad business is actually reaccelerating. Search is showing stronger pricing and improving click-through rates, which helps reinforce their view that AI cannibalization fears were overstated. Overstated by me. they're saying the Google Cloud platform is being driven by higher margin AI workloads. That's so weird. I just read that workloads were lower margin for AI. Who knows anything? They're also emphasizing Alphabet's balance sheet strength. cash flow plus slower CapEx intensity versus their peers.
Yeah, wait a minute. I thought Redbush was talking about unit economics.
Maybe they're looking at a different Alphabet. They didn't downgrade Alphabet. They downgraded Amazon and Microsoft. Loop says Alphabet's still the best risk reward among the mega cap AI names. And much less exposure to the severe CapEx burdens that Amazon and Microsoft are facing. All right. What I think this all boils down to is what's changed in the last 2 weeks is not the fundamentals of the AI race. And I think everybody still understands that these companies sort of have to continue if they want to be relevant and competitive in the future. I think what's changed is what is the cost of it going to be? And is there a payback that's going to come soon enough to justify the cost and also the way it's being paid for, all the debt? So I want to remind people why everyone was bulled up on these stocks in the first place. We're not all delusional. Raymond James is projecting that cloud revenue for AI will explode in the next 5 years to 9 times its current value. Thank you, John. So what you're looking at here is the revenue from AI cloud products and services. This is what Ray J thinks they'll be able to charge all of the companies and people on earth that want to utilize this tech. Like it's not this mass fever dream of nonsense. You know, it's not like we're all kidding ourselves. Like this is the opportunity that they're all investing for. So that's like on an annual basis. So I want to remind people of that. The problem is who's going to pay for it and how. So this is from the journal.
Taxpayers, duh.
Yeah, sure. Eventually. JP Morgan's fundamental research created a financial model that projects total investment in global AI infrastructure through 2030, taking physical limitations into account. You know what the physical limitations are? There are already so many plans for data centers and connecting them to the grid that companies like GE Vernova are telling Wall Street, we're booked out until 2028. If somebody came to us with a new project, we couldn't say yes to it until 2029. The physical limitations are you have to connect natural gas turbines to these transformers, which look like gray house-shaped boxes or box-shaped houses. And like to get physically the electricity, like that's that limitation. But the point is they're saying it's $5 trillion to build all the stuff that's been committed to. What they did was they calculated how much new revenue these companies would have to generate to justify spending $5 trillion on these AI supercomputers. And what they came up with is AI products, ChatGPT, all the enterprise stuff that Anthropic sells, et cetera, would have to create an additional $650 billion a year indefinitely just to give investors a reasonable 10% annual return.
Who was that? Who's the 650?
JP Morgan. So just to put that number in perspective, $650 billion a year, that's more than 150% of Apple's annual revenue. OpenAI's current revenue is about $20 billion. So think about the distance between $20 billion and $650 billion for AI revenue to get to, just for investors spending that $5 trillion to earn back 10%.
Yeah.
That would equate to every iPhone owner in the world agreeing to pay an extra $35 a month for products and subscription. Like just to try to like figure out like what is the payback. So if you ask me like what's changed, fundamentally nothing. What's really changed is the way we're thinking about the bill. What is the cost? When do we recoup it? And how are we borrowing the money to do it? That's the really big change here.
And the spark was lit when Sam Altman was asked, hey, wait a minute. You're doing $13 billion in revenue. How are you going to pay this $1.3 trillion bill that you amassed over the next 10 years? And he basically said, he hung up and said, I can't wait to get for you to short stock.
He went like this.
Yeah, not so. Yeah, so are the all of the questions, all of the reasons for the air coming out recently? I think it all makes sense to me, right? Like all of it all makes sense. I don't think anybody's dumb for selling.
All right, you're up.
All right, let's. I want to talk about some charts that I found in the Daily Chart Book, who does a daily, well, it's a chart book, daily, and it's great stuff. So this is from Citadel Securities. Retail investors continue to add into weakness, becoming the new price setters. Well, I'll be damned. During the latest pullback, retail flows showed one of the largest buy the dip events on record.
Unbelievable. Look at that spike. I guess they know how to disentangle retail buyers from institutional buyers. Like, they know what they're looking at.
Yeah, Vanda Research does this as well. There's also something called a retail risk on, risk off index.
This is Roro.
Citadel. So this tool tracks whether retail investors are increasing or reducing exposure to different forms of market risk. This week saw the fifth strongest retail dip buying in the past 2 years. So stocks are dipping and we're buying.
I'm going to tell you something. How often do they run this? Weekly?
Every four. So I don't know. I'm assuming. Okay. Yeah. Looks like it.
Look, this week, we don't know what NVIDIA will bring. So I'm just going to tell you, if it's more of this for the rest of the week, I think that retail, that Roro shit is going to be way less. I think retail buys the dip really quickly and with tons of conviction. I just don't think they do it on the third week.
Completely agree. There was a great article in the FT talking about, they call it the Squid Game market. How Asian retail traders are driving U.S. meme stocks. I didn't come up with that name, so don't get mad at me. Look at this. I mean, this is wild. So they say,
it's like a little racist.
Yeah, I think so. Known for their high risk tolerance, herd behavior, and use of leverage, South Korean traders have piled into U.S. markets this year. Their holdings doubled, $170 billion at the end of October. And what they're particularly keen to buy are the crazy shit. So IONQ is a huge, huge holder of theirs. It's the fifth most popular U.S. stock for South Korean investors. They do a lot of the leverage shit. Like, they are having a party.
You know what's interesting? The Asian stocks got murdered overnight. And that's like new because, they have AI exposure. Like, Europe was down 1%, and I think Asia was down 2.5 or 3, like, as a group. Some of those markets got just absolutely annihilated overnight. They're sort of acting like our market. And it's weird, right? Because they don't have Amazon and Microsoft and Meta in their indices. I mean, they have other companies that are exposed to the theme, but this kind of went global over the last 24 hours in a way that a lot of US tech sell-offs just historically haven't or should not have. And I sort of feel like that's new. What do you think?
Yes. Funny you should mention, because I don't pay attention to Asian markets that often, but I did see a headline this morning and I said, different.
Yeah. They beat them up.
Look at this table from our friend Todd Sohn. So the levered long single stock ETF drawdowns. So the monster ones, I'm sorry, not the monster, the MicroStrategy ones from Defiance and T-Rex, down 95 and 97% from 52 week highs. And still, MSTU, is that at the peak?
Wait, stop.
500, no, I won't stop.
97%?
$557 million in this thing. Let me see.
Wait, I don't understand. This is in dollars or in market cap?
Sir, that's percent. Price.
Wait, the 2X long MicroStrategy ETF is in 100% drawdown? Like it's almost zero?
It's down. It bounced today. So yeah, basically. Now it's only down 93%. Now it's only in a 93% drawdown.
Oh my God. I'm eyeballing some of these. I didn't even know they had 2Xs for, there's a 2X for Super Micro.
Need it. You got to have it. What's wrong with you?
What crack smoking Muppet is 2X long SMCI?
Holy shit.
What are we doing here?
So this thing, okay. So that chart, put it back on for a sec. That number, the AUM, that's as of today, dude. So the T-Rex MSTU, at its peak, it had $3.4 billion. Now it's $550 million.
What the hell are people doing? Why is there that much money?
Dude, it's Squid Game. Were you not paying attention?
This is like walking into Vegas, like walk up to the first table you see. Say, oh, blackjack. I love blackjack. Here's $4 million. let's play. Like,
yeah.
This is like people are gambling their balls off.
Yeah. Did you know?
Is it good? Is it like sort of good? I mean, it's bad because we know on the other side of the trade is Ken Griffin, and he's going to buy 10 more apartment buildings in Brickell. We understand like where this money goes. It doesn't disappear. It's transferred to somebody else. So from that perspective, it's not great for like wealth inequality because it's all going to Jane Street and Citadel. But is it like good because these are young people who need to get their education now before they do this with real money?
Is it good? I mean,
is it good?
No, it's not good. Who is it good for? It's great but for isn't it the Ken
right
Griffin.
But isn't it the right lesson?
It's not good. Let's just be clear. It's not good. There is a double levered BMNR, the Bitcoin, the Bitminer, Tom's thing. There's a double.
You needed a double of that. Of course we did.
Listen, this is unfettered capitalism. If there's
who launched the double,
it's T-Rex.
B minor.
So if there is a demand for these products, you know, they'll be launched.
Listen, the only thing better than Tom Lee is double Tom Lee. So I get it. It's just, I don't understand the dollar amounts here. Like, why are these so big? Why were these so big?
So 570. So this thing just launched because it's not old. And it just immediately $575 million. Like, that's a lot of money. So is this good? No, it's not good.
It's actually so f***ed up.
No, it's not good. Come on.
It's like really bad. And there's nobody nobody's watching this. Like, societally, we have decided deregulation and like anybody can launch anything and play at your own risk. Yeah, and the apps are encouraging it. And there's like, there's nobody coming to save any of these people. Nobody.
So this is serious money. When you have the double levered SPY ETF and you touch a hot stove and you learn your lesson, okay. But this, like, why does this need to exist?
All right, I'm gonna say one thing, and this will be unpopular, but I don't care. I'm as for deregulation as the next person, and I do think adults should be allowed to do what they want to do within reason. I think we should draw the line at like scams. But like, if something is a bet and a bet goes against you and you're an adult, like, you know, that's just the way life works. Don't bet money you can't afford to lose. Okay. I get it that's where the fault lines are. But I also think that in the midterm elections, if the Democrats have a little bit of a wave and they take some seats, it's going to be nervous time for the people that are running around Wall Street, acting like robber barons, launching f***ed up products. And, convincing people to do really dumb things. And ultimately, if you ever, I don't know if it'll ever happen again, if you ever get a Democrat in the White House who brings in their own SEC person and they decide, you know what, let's do a look back and see who was taking advantage of the public, like a lot of this stuff is going to get drugged back out onto the carpet. Like I think right now we're in an environment where people are just like, I get to do whatever I want. As long as I disclose and disclaim, I can launch anything. I can encourage any kind of behavior. And that might not always be the case forever.
That's never going to happen. Who's to say where the line is? This one is good. That one is bad.
It's not even a legal argument. It's a moralistic. Like, was this in the best interest of the users of your brokerage platform? Like, how are you going to defend that? You're going to pay the fine. You can't defend it. I'm just saying, like, if you get a regime change at regulatory bodies who may want to go back and say, we got to clean some of this stuff up from the last era. And that really does happen. And a lot of people right now seem to have short memories of prior episodes where that happened. So I just, you know, it's all fun and games. And I know a lot of people are making a ton of money and I'm not player hating, but like this stuff doesn't just go away. You launch a product that drops 98%, like, it was the Trump era. What do you want me to say? Like, that's not how it's going to go. And I know it's not because I've been around for a long time and I've seen the pendulum go in both directions. All right. Let's do private credit. Our friends in private credit. You are really good about listening to the calls. And I just kind of like vibe comment on this stuff, but you actually do the work. And I wanted you to give me your take on what you heard, the difference between what Blue Owl is talking about versus a firm like Apollo, because it sort of seems like a boys and men, the separation between the boys and the men right now.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what you gleaned from listening to what these companies are saying.
So I did this morning with Ben on what are your on Animal Service, excuse me.
And all right, then we'll skip I'll just listen to that.
No, stop. I'm saying I'm prepared. So, okay, I listened to Apollo's earnings calls. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, Apollo is one of the gorillas in the private credit room. Mark Rowan, co-founder and CEO, is an absolute wildebeest. And he was asked very pointed questions about the rate environment and investors allocating away from private credit because these are floating rate securities. And so as rates come down, they are less enticing for investors. And he answered the question like a f***ing man. He said, yes, listen, let's be grownups. The opportunity set today is less attractive than it was 1 year, 2 years, 3 years ago. Hey, guess what? You could say the same thing for public equities. I wish I bought NVIDIA 3 years ago. I mean, this is what he said. He said, so yes, undoubtedly, we are tightening our standards. We are being diligent. We are not upping risk. Okay. And it was a phenomenal answer. And then you hear Mark Lipschultz, who was clapping back at Jamie Dimon after the cockroach comment. And so not in fairness, but just in factness.
Who is that?
So Mark Lipschultz is the founder and CEO of Blue Owl, which is the biggest, it's called GP Stakes company in the world. GP Stakes is they are seeding a lot of these alternative asset managers. It's a great business and they're taking unit economics off of that business. Okay. They're also in the private credit game, and you might've heard Blue Owl because they are responsible for doing all of the largest deals with all these hyperscalers. They're financing Metas and all of them. He was asked a question about why their BDCs, which are public vehicles, are getting sold and what investors may get wrong. And oh boy, the difference in the answer and the tone between what he said and what Mark Rowan said could not be more dissimilar. It was defensive. It was nasty. It was investors don't understand. Well, guess what? I understand. The stock is down 50% from its highs almost. The BDCs are getting murdered. And now the FT did a report that they are trying to merge their private credit vehicle into the public credit vehicle, into the BDC, because they're getting redemptions out the ass. And some of the quotes from the article are so LOLZ, absolute clown of the week awards. So we'll get to that in a second, but at a high level, that's the story.
Let's show people what we're talking about in terms of the share prices. So the first chart is the corporation Blue Owl itself, which is basically the GP sitting on top of all of their funds.
This is the equity.
Yeah. So if you're a shareholder in this, you own a piece of Blue Owl Capital Incorporated, the company. So whatever funds they launch, whatever fees they collect, whatever deals they do, you're like kind of like alongside the GPs. And this thing is a $13 stock now, down from almost 30. It's in a 38% drawdown year to date. And they're
not worse. It's down 38% year to date. It's the drawdown is way worse.
The drawdown's bigger. Yeah. It appears that there's no end in sight. It's a relentless downtrend with very few positive weeks along the way. And I don't know where this stops. The next chart though, and this is the thing that I have been harping on, this is the BDC. So this is a Blue Owl product that is itself publicly traded. And basically they are making loans to private companies that are either on better terms or done quicker than what these companies would be able to do with a traditional bank. Obviously, we know because of regulations, the traditional banks, they're not lending as much. They don't take as much of their own balance sheet risk, blah, blah, blah. So that's where this whole private credit boom came from. It came from the last crisis where we decided we don't want deposit institutions that hold on to money for teachers and policemen to engage in this type of risk taking. So somebody had to step in, and they did, and they're all giant companies. But this BDC itself, the concern here is, at the end of the day, people own it for the yield. The yield on not just this, but all of the BDCs is predicated on whatever the interest rates are in the real economy. And if you own something that pays, I don't even know what the yield is on this now, but let's say this year it was 9%, 10%. And the interest rate is on its way down. The Fed has been cutting. You already know next year the yield on this is going to be lower, which generates selling, which Blue Owl can't do anything about that. That's beyond their control. They didn't do anything wrong. It's just the natural progression of what happens to yield instruments in the stock market when the interest rate, prevailing interest rate, goes lower. So people are selling it for that reason. But there are also a lot of reporters that are hot on the trail of whether or not a lot of these loans in these portfolios will continue to perform, which has introduced a secondary concern. So now you have this thing selling off and the owners are like, wait, is it selling off because the dividend might go lower? Or is it selling off because the Financial Times is right and all of these loans are a mess? And what Lipschitz is trying to get across is these are just fantasies that we have to answer. Like people are making up stories and everything is fine.
But wait, there's a third, correct. That was basically his comment. They reported, by the way, at the end of October. So if they reported this week, the questions would be a lot harsher. And the bullshit answers that he gave would not fly. But there's a third leg to the stool that is they are in the perfect storm. The hyperscalers and the data centers that are now coming into question. Hey, wait a minute. Meta has an option to opt out of the lease. Like they are not where you want to be. And guess what? So thank God. I own Blue Owl, the equity. I sold it earlier in the year. To be clear, I think if you're selling Blue Owl down here, you're an absolute donkey. Like I think that you would not
be long the BDC. You're talking about the corporation.
I'm talking about the equity, and I would much rather be long than short the BDC, to be clear too. But there is a story there as well. So this is from the FT. Earlier this month, Blue Owl told its shareholders that it planned to merge its Blue Owl Capital Corporation 2 fund. This is the private fund, okay? This is the private credit fund, which has $1 billion in assets and was one of the first private debt funds targeting wealthy individual investors. With its OBDC fund, which is the BDC, the publicly listed one, which has 17
billion. The one that's currently in the process of crashing. All right.
So they're talking about merger of the two funds as redemptions of Blue Owl Capital Corporation 2 have climbed this year to a level where it would eventually be forced to restrict investor redemptions. They've pulled $150 million from the fund through the first 9 months of this year, a 20% increase from last year. Okay, but here's the clown of the week quote. I'm sorry, Jonathan Lamb, CFO. In an interview with the FT.
I think he's on the Compound and Friends later this week.
At current prices, the investors in Blue Owl Capital Corporation 2 could take a potential haircuts on their investments. But he said, and this is the, I can't believe he said this out loud. The merger came with significant benefits, such as the ability to own more liquid shares in OBDC. Excuse me, I thought the appeal was the illiquidity premium.
That was the whole point.
What are you talking about?
All right, why am I in private credit if you're merging it with a public equity? It gets worse.
Quote, there's no doubt that this is a no-brainer transaction at 95 cents, said Lamb of the new merger. Wait, why? And guess what?
They're not talking about
95 cents. They're talking about 80 cents. And no doubt. Excuse me, sir. What in God's name are you talking about? I have doubts. Lots of doubts.
Yeah. Do you have a Quotron? There's no doubt. There's only doubt.
So anyway.
Will that stabilize? Wait a minute. If they do that, could that bring stability to the publicly traded BDC?
Now, also the
public assets into the portfolio?
It's $1 billion. A publicly traded BDC has more leverage, so maybe this will take the leverage down a little bit. I don't know where it goes from here, but all of the smoke that they're inhaling, they deserve.
And to be
clear, so I think the reaction might be justified. Is it an overreaction? Maybe we'll find out. They're in the thick of it. Yeah, not great.
The dividend yield is 12% on OBDC.
Yeah. Is that it? Okay.
I don't know if that's accurate because up to date. Because I'm also seeing sources say it's 13.28%. Oh, and this is the other thing that people don't know about BDCs, or they should know, but you know, it's not it's not obvious. Like with stocks, like dividend paying stocks, like Dividend Aristocrats, you don't have like this crazy swing in the quarterly payment. Like they tend to institute a dividend that they could stick to. They may not raise it a lot each year, but they try not to give you that variability.
Oh,
they try
to give you floating.
That's right. Yeah. That's not what's happening with these. Like the dividend, you can't annualize. That you can annualize it, but you shouldn't because you're just making shit up. All you can go by is what they declare for next quarter and hope for the best for the following quarter.
One last thing. Let's just look at the portfolio. So the as far as like what actually is going on in here, this is not bullshit, okay? These are legitimate loans. There's 293 companies in here. I don't know if the marks are valid or what. Obviously, the street is questioning that. But these are legitimate services being provided to companies all around the country. It's a diversified portfolio. I don't know about the covenants, the lending standards, or whatever, but all of this is obviously coming under scrutiny.
I wanted to just say as a capper to this, Chertoff, this is what happens.
Larry.
This is what happens when you decide our target market for this is the wealth management channel. Respectfully, you could put all the educational, and we talked about this with Shanali on the show, you could put all the educational materials you want in front of the advisors, in front of their clients. When push comes to shove and you need them to act like institutions, they will not. They cannot. They're not institutions. They're people who have bills to pay and dreams to achieve. They're not 100-year college endowments that are funded in perpetuity. You cannot count on wealth management clients behaving like pension funds, you idiot. So I'm all for democratizing access. I totally get it. I'm not anti. I'm not a hater. But like, don't have a vehicle set up where the thing you're counting on is that some schmuck financial advisor didn't sell this to people as low risk because it's bonds. Because I know they did, because I listen to people talk, and I've been around too long, and I know that some people sold this right, and some people didn't, and this is the FO part of that process.
No doubt.
So, all right.
No doubt. All right. Let's, where are we at next? Sorry, I got lost in the sauce here.
Stock market sell-off.
Okay. All right. Let's get into it.
You got some charts here.
I got some charts here. All right. Let's actually skip the first one. Let's go to the beat and the miss reaction. So we've been all over this. The companies that are missing earnings, this is Moore and Pies, by the way, are just getting taken out to the woodshed. Is it woodshop? Woodshop. What is it? It was woodshed or shop?
No, it's taken out behind the woodshed.
Like, right, who that's can remember what, that? Taken out
no,
behind
it's
the
like
woodshed.
It's like a child abuse. It's a child abuse metaphor. It's like if you misbehaved, your dad would take you out behind the woodshed where nobody could see or hear you scream.
Wow. All right, that got dark. All right,
well,
so
it's the etymology.
Okay, so all right, check. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm check this out. Etymology. Okay, go to the next. I'm done with this. Go to the next table, John. All right. Thank you, Sean, the great Sean Russo. Top 20 worst market cap drawdowns from their peak. These are numbers, dude. NVIDIA, $594 billion. Meta, $469 billion. Microsoft, $349. Amazon, $328. Oracle, $300. United Health, $264. Tesla, $220. Broadcom, $215. So what is that? One, two, three. I don't know. There's like a dozen stocks that have lost $100 billion or more in market value.
Yeah. And these are, everybody owns these stocks. Like these are the stocks that are in all everyone's portfolio, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like
the list.
That's the salient point is like, these are the most widely held stocks in the world. Let me show you something worse. These are I asked Sean and Charkid, the largest non S&P 500 market caps that are currently in 50% drawdowns.
Why did you ask this? I'm curious.
Okay. So the chart off, I'll explain it really quickly. These are the stocks that when you talk to some investors and they have some hotshot guy who's doing like some SMA for them. Like, and I know of programs like this at Morgan Stanley, at Merrill, where it's like, oh, did you hear about this guy, Todd, whatever his name is? He like has this concentrated portfolio of the best growth stocks and they're not in the index. And like, you know, it's like this whole thing. And in a bull market, it looks unbelievable. And it's like clients are high-fiving their advisor. But what we're seeing now is what ends up happening to these types of things. And it always does. It's only a matter of time. These are non-S&P 500 names. So theoretically, any money you make in these is pure alpha because it's not beta, right?
Right.
All right. Here are the names. Strategy is 61% from its 52-week high. Atlassian, which is Team, 54%. Circle is in a 74% drawdown. Did you know that?
My God.
Before I showed it to you?
I look at this chart a lot, but it's wild.
Wild. And that company sells fucking money market funds, just for anyone that doesn't understand. Okay. HubSpot, 58%. Duolingo, 67%. Oklo, 50%. Congratulitos. Rigatoni Computing, 56%. Hims is in a 50% drawdown. So, and there's real dollar amounts involved. Like Strategy has shed $68 billion from its 52-week high. So, this is like the part of the market where people were making the most money, like in the first half of the year, first 8 months of the year. And man, it turns so fast and nobody taps you on the shoulder and tells you when to walk out of the party. Like nobody, of course not.
If anything,
you're adding more money to those strategies.
So dude, I'm looking at Oklo and we were talking about this head and shoulders top, which is only obvious in hindsight, like duh. But so this thing ran to 190, right? It dropped like and consolidated a little bit down to 158, stabilized a little bit, boom, the bottom fell out behind the woodshed, whatever, went down to 110, okay? And then here's the dangerous part.
I believe it's pronounced Oklo. It's Japanese for capital loss.
Right. So it bounced from 115 back up to 150, creating this, whew, we're safe. Nope, motherfucker, that's the right shoulder. And then boom. So even in hindsight, you're like, you understand how people get trapped in these names. It's so hard to get out.
It's so hard, dude. If you're not trailing it with a stop, like you could like go to the dentist and it's down 14% on no news. And it's like, well, what do I do now? I guess I'll just stick it out. Diamond hands, blah, blah, blah. And then the next day it's down another 14%. Like these, when these things get going to the downside, I have two of these in my portfolio, like very small. I have Archer and Joby.
Oh, you had a great line last week. I draw the line at flying cars.
Yeah. Well, my flying cars are demolished. Archer's way worse than Joby. They had good earnings reports. And when I say earnings, I'm doing ironic air quotes. You just can't see. All right, DGen Dow, let's put this up.
Smushed.
20% drawdown versus 3.2% over the time period from January 2023 to now. Is that
okay? That's right. All right. So this next chart from Adam Parker, this is the point that I was trying to make earlier. I am not making light of a sell-off. Okay. I am only saying that there has been so much enthusiasm in the market and this is a clearing of the decks, a reset. So Adam has a chart that shows the number of top 50 stocks. Okay. Giant stocks, the number of top 50 that are up 50% over various windows, and look at the 12 month on top. There were just too many stocks that were going up too far, too fast. Even if you zoom in to 6 months, you had Oracle, a multi $100 billion stock going up 35% on the announcement, which has obviously all gone back and more. Like it was just too much. And now is the reintroduction of risk, which is healthy in a bull market. You know what's not healthy? What's not healthy is no introduction of risk. What's not healthy is up 10% every month. That is dangerous, okay? Giving some back, pullbacks along the way, that sets up for higher prices. And take this with a grain of salt. Who the hell knows? I can't see the future. But I like the setup. I think we see higher prices before the end of the year or at least early in Q1.
Okay. Listen, I like the setup better than I like the setup in October when it was 20 straight days of stocks being up a half a percent
that
a day.
That I did not like. So we'll see. Maybe this ages very poorly, but whatever.
All right. I'm going to call an audible. We're going to throw topic five out. It was more AI shit, and I think I'd rather kill myself.
Yeah.
All right. You're going to make the case.
All right.
AI.
I bought Meta today.
You did. 19 times forward earnings. I like
it.
Dude,
it's a market multiple. I don't give a shit. You know what I mean?
Like,
I'm comfortable holding it. If it gets murdered, I'll buy more. I swapped Home Depot, which I should have done a long time ago. Obviously, the housing story is not housing. Took a 7% loss on that in my IRA, whatever. I can't take a tax write-off, but no big deal. I like Meta here. I'm comfortable with it. We don't need to go into the story. It's down 25%. People are selling for legitimate reasons. I'm buying.
You have 2.5 months before you have to worry about an earnings report, so that's good. I think the stock's in the penalty box.
It definitely is.
No. I mean, like, even if we get a year-end melt-up after all, I don't know that this is one of the leading names in that melt-up. I like the purchase here. I would not be a seller here. We've learned so many times what happens when everybody gets bearish on Zuckerberg. Like, whenever that happens, it's only a matter of time before he pulls another ace out of his sleeve and the stock is ripping back to highs again. And so I feel like that will ultimately happen.
It is deeply out of favor. So am I early? Yeah, maybe.
You might be early, but I don't disagree with you. I like it. I'm not in the stock at all right now. And I was eyeballing it.
Last thing, I also bought Oracle. I never owned Oracle my entire life. I sold Disney and I bought Oracle.
I like that last 50 times earnings.
Don't care. Throw that chart up. Throw the chart up that we... I'm just kidding, but whatever.
We don't have it. All right. Everyone knows what the Oracle chart looks like. It looks like shit. Congratulations on your purchase.
Thank you. All right.
Mystery chart time.
Okay.
This is ironic. I'm not even going to give you a hint. You don't deserve one. What is it? Is it triple top? You know how there's no such thing as triple tops? Well, today there is.
Man, I love it. I assume that we spoke about this name today.
Oh my God. Dude, please get this right.
Oh, okay. Facebook?
No, what? There's a price next to the ticker. What are you talking about?
I don't know. Wait, what? You know clues?
Facebook's, you just right. bought Facebook?
I don't know. You said please get this right. I panicked.
This is so much worse.
Oh, NVIDIA.
I'm telling you the price is $344.
I'm telling you, I'm not cheating. I'm not looking at my screen. All right, what the fuck is the stock?
Do the reveal.
All right, whatever.
You just sold it. All right, for those listening, it's...
Dude, when I'm done with the stock, I'm done. I erase this from my memory.
You can't...
Erased.
Chart back on. All right, so it is a triple top for now. The CEO basically said the three drivers of home improvement spending, all of them are working against the company. One of those is home price appreciation. You don't have it. Another one of those is, I forget what they were.
He said no natural disasters.
Dude, it's a very, very good company, extremely high quality in every way, just in a moment in time that does not work for their earnings. And as a result, they took down guidance, which is appropriate. Mm-hmm. This will be a strong buy, and it won't.
I was
be,
about to say, if this
it
goes
won't
back,
be long.
If this goes back to 275, I'm backing up the truck.
Somebody in the chat, Rivian Millionaire, is saying first time in 26 years, Home Depot didn't beat. Is that true?
That's wild. Wow.
Should we chat GPT that?
No, I believe him. I believe him. That guy's trustworthy.
All right, dude, I'm dying. You just sold the stock 10 minutes ago and you don't know the chart.
I mean, in fairness to me, I sold it this morning. I had a busy desk.
You really wiped your brain clean of that thing.
See ya.
All right, that's it from us, guys. I'm told we're close to breaking a record for the live. Thousands of you joined us tonight.
Let's go.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I also want to let everybody know tomorrow's Wednesday morning, which means an all-new edition of Animal Spirits with Michael and Ben. We'll do Ask the Compound later this week. And then a very special guest on The Compound and Friends, which we're going to get out to you on Friday. So please keep it locked here on The Compound. We'll see you soon.